And I can't imagine preaching through Proverbs without spending at least a little bit of time talking about what has to be the most famous passage from Proverbs. You all had to know this was coming when we started a series on Proverbs a couple of months ago. It's Proverbs chapter 31, and it's a poem, a passage that the sages of Israel saved for the very end. So let's read it. Proverbs chapter 31, beginning in verse 10. A woman or a wife, in the original language, it can be translated either way. A woman or wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She is like the merchant ships bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it is still night, and she provides food for her family and portions for her female servants. She considers a field and buys it. Now, out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable, and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand, she holds the distaff, and she grasps the spindle with her fingers. I have no idea what that means. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She is clothed in fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes a seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arise and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, he says, but you surpass them all. Now, charm is deceptive, and beauty is fleeting. But a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Honor her for all her hands have done, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. Whew. That passage leaves me exhausted, and all I did was read it. Wow, man, what a woman. She does it all, and I mean she does all of it. She does the shopping. She provides the food. She buys land. She plants crops. She sows. She gets up early in the morning and she works late into the night. She takes care of everyone in her family, in her household, and she also takes care of the poor and those who are in need. And when she's not taking care of everyone around her, she's got a little business on the side, making and selling fine garments. It's unreal. Her children wake up in a blessed mood. How can they not? Her husband praises her at the public square. Well, of course he should. Because from the sound of it, it's her work ethic that gives him all the spare time he needs to hang out at the city gate shooting the bull with his cronies. I can already tell this is going to go so much better than first service did. Like most of what we read in Proverbs, this is given from a male's perspective. And this woman in this poem is honored specifically because she makes it possible for her husband to live a blessed life. That's what frames this, at least initially. It's a husband, a man, praising a woman who makes his life so much easier. Now, the book of Proverbs is a book of wisdom. We read Proverbs because we believe we can gain God's wisdom from Proverbs. So what wisdom is this poem at the end of Proverbs imparting? What is this little poem trying to teach us? Well, I think in the most obvious way, it's acknowledging what every wise man in the world already knows. And that is our lives are blessed. As men, our lives are blessed, sustained, and held together by strong, capable women. Either our mothers growing up or our wives if we're married. On behalf of all the men in the room, may I say to the ladies, we simply could not make it without you. And all the men said, amen. All right, that was not bad. I think you could have done a little better. I wasn't setting you up for anything. And all the men said, amen. I love the story of a married couple. They've been married for 50 years and are sitting on the front porch of their house. She looks at her husband of 50 years and the wife says, go inside and put on a sweater. He goes inside, puts on a sweater, comes back out, sits down next to her, sits there for a minute. He says to his wife, was I cold or are we going somewhere? That's really the way it works. And there's a reason why so many preachers will dust off this poem and read it and preach from it on Mother's Day, because it is a celebration of all the many different things that strong, capable, virtuous, noble women do to make the world go round. But it's more than just a general celebration of women. It does seem that what this poem is doing on a slightly deeper level is it is telling young men what kind of woman to marry. Remember, the target audience of Proverbs is a young man. We learn that from the first few chapters of Proverbs, where a father is making a series of speeches to his son, and he's imparting wisdom to him. He's giving him instructions that he needs to successfully navigate life so that he can make wise decisions. And as I showed you last week, the father spends a lot of time in those first 9 chapters of Proverbs talking to his young son about women. And one theme is he's always telling his son, be careful of certain kinds of women. Avoid certain kinds of women, certain kinds of parts of town where certain kinds of women are, so that you can avoid sexual immorality. There's that piece of wisdom. We talked about that last week. And if you're reading Proverbs and you're not a young man in need of that kind of advice, you have to flip it so that it could apply to a young woman. But if you're not a young man or a young woman, that kind of advice doesn't apply to you, then you have to read what he says and mine it for even deeper levels of universal wisdom that you can apply to different people in different situations. But either way, there's all kinds of wisdom to be found in what the father is saying to the son. One of the most important lessons this father passes on to his son is that one of the most important decisions his son will ever make is the kind of woman he's going to spend his life with. In Proverbs chapter 5, the father warns his son against committing adultery. It can get him killed. But then to give him a positive vision of a relationship with a woman, he says, don't commit adultery, but instead enjoy the wife of your youth. Now, we're not going to read that passage this morning because there are children in the room, but trust me, it's a good one and you can read it on your own. A little later in Proverbs chapter 12, we have this wisdom. This seems to be a preview of what will come in chapter 31. A wife of noble character is her husband's crown. Again, this is a male speaking. It's good to have a good wife. But a disgraceful wife is like decay in his bones. Choose wisely, son, you can hear the father saying. Or Proverbs 14, verse 1. The wise woman builds her house. So you thought it was a wise man who built his house. No, it's the wise woman who builds her house. The wise woman builds her house, but with her own hands, the foolish one tears her down. This seems to be just a quick summary of what's going to come in Proverbs 31. Chapter 31, that poem is going to give us a longer look at what it means for a wise woman to build her house. So on some level, we read this poem as the ideal description of the kind of woman a young man should aspire to marry. And the form of this poem is idyllic. It's an acrostic. In the original language, every line begins with the next letter, or successive letters, in the Hebrew alphabet. It's done with great intentionality. Imagine you have a poem in English that has 26 lines, one for each letter of the alphabet, and the first line begins with an A, second line begins with a B, third line begins with a C. That's how it works. A woman, A, woman of noble character, who can find? B, beautiful she is in the eyes of her man. C, because she not only brings home the bacon, she fries it up in a pan. You see the way it works? That's what's happening in the original language. It doesn't translate well, so we miss it. This is an ancient Hebrew literary form signifying perfection or completion. The very nature of the poem says this is a perfect poem. And it's written for the perfect woman. And the gist of this poem seems to be to this young man or young men who are listening carefully, seems to be, son, if you can find a woman like this, if you can find a woman who can do all of these things, if you can find a woman like this, let her build her house with you in it. As you will be blessed. And life will go well for you. And you will live happily ever after. It sounds a bit like a fairy tale, doesn't it? Or is it actually more of a nightmare? It has come to my attention that not every woman hears this poem out of Proverbs chapter 31 as good news. But sometimes when this poem is read in church or it's preached from in sermons, rather than leaving feeling honored and inspired and built up and encouraged, some women leave feeling guilty and overwhelmed, discouraged, because they don't feel like they can possibly live up to what is described in this poem. It's not good news. It's a major bummer. And if you disagree with that assessment of how some women hear this poem, don't come complaining to me. Take it up with the women and ladies Bible class. They're the ones who told me to say that. Wade, make sure you get this part in. We don't like this poem. Because it can be a burden. It's a lot to ask. And while I'm at it, this is a good time for me to say to all the single men in the room, it's probably not a good idea to take this poem too seriously. This is not a checklist. It could be setting you up for some major disappointment. You could read this, it's in the Bible. You could read this and think, I'm supposed to marry a woman who does not exist. Actually, she does exist, but she's already married to me, so I'm sorry about that. What else am I supposed to say in that situation? And to my married brothers, please listen to the voice of wisdom here. Never read this poem out loud to your wife as your marriage is transitioning from I do to you'd better. That can get you killed too. More than one way to die in Proverbs. And what was originally intended to be this epic, heroic, idealistic celebration of what strong, capable women can do has become, for many, it seems, a source of discouragement for women and disappointment for men. Maybe that's why some men in ancient Israel had more than one wife. It's the only way they could check the boxes. You're going to be in charge of real estate. You're going to be in charge of the food. You make the clothes. So First Service didn't like that joke either. Is it just polygamy that's not funny? Or, polygamy used to be funny. Now you can't even joke about it in church. Or maybe, more likely, This poem was never intended to be taken seriously, never intended to be taken literally, because it's obviously this overly romanticized, idealistic, unrealistic description of what women, wives, and mothers are called to be. Not just in our culture, but in any culture, including the original culture in which it was written. One scholar argues that it's likely there was never a woman in the history of ancient Israel who had the freedom and the opportunity to do everything that this woman does in this poem. Even if she were very wealthy, she would have never been able to do all of this. Well, of course not. It's not realistic. But maybe one of the reasons we don't hear this as good news, maybe one of the reasons this has become a burden, maybe the reasons we misread this poem is because we're applying it to the wrong woman. Maybe there's more going on in this poem than just a description for a young man of the ideal wife. Maybe upon closer reading, there's more going on in this poem. There is wisdom here for all of us. It's waiting for us to find it, but we got to dig for it. Because it's available on a much deeper, more profound level. Maybe this poem was withheld to the very end of Proverbs because it reinforces the main idea of Proverbs that we've been hearing all along. You notice at the beginning of the poem, this woman of noble character is said to be more precious than rubies, worth more than anything else in the world, so valuable. And if we've been paying attention as we've read through Proverbs, we'll remember that that exact same description was applied to lady wisdom, the personification of wisdom, lady wisdom, in the early chapters of Proverbs, in chapter 3 and chapter 8. Exact same. A wife of noble character, worth far more than rubies. You go back to Proverbs 3:15, speaking of lady wisdom, she is more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with her. Proverbs 8:11, for wisdom is more precious than rubies, and nothing you desire can compare to her. I wonder who this poem is about. At the end of the poem, it says this woman fears the Lord. And at the beginning of Proverbs, we're told that the fear of the Lord, this awe, this respect for God, is the beginning or the essence of wisdom. You can't have wisdom without the fear of the Lord. And this woman embodies the fear of the Lord, embodies wisdom. Maybe when we read this poem and we consider all this industrious woman does and the way she miraculously gets it done, maybe instead of reading it and saying, that's unrealistic, maybe we're meant to read it as the epitome of wisdom, the personification of wisdom. This is what wisdom looks like in action. Because this woman is no fool. Not a hothead, not a big mouth, certainly not a sluggard. She's the opposite of all the different fools that are described in Proverbs. And instead, she's the kind of person that Proverbs says God's wisdom will make all of us into if we listen to it and follow it and obey it. This woman isn't some lucky guy's wife. This woman is none other than Lady Wisdom herself, showing up one last time at the end of Proverbs to make sure we get the message. It was back in Proverbs chapter 9. Remember, what did Lady Wisdom do? She invited us to go home with her, all of us. Come home with me and feast at my table. And we're given a choice in Proverbs chapter 9. You can go home with Lady Wisdom or you can go home with Dame Folly. You can follow the path of wisdom, you can follow the path of foolishness. And we're warned that if you choose to go home, if you choose to spend time, if you choose to eat with the wrong kind of woman, it will ruin your life. So choose wisely and choose carefully. And if this woman in Proverbs 31 is actually Lady Wisdom, and I believe she is, then she's showing up one last time so that we hear it one last time. We've been hearing it from the very beginning all the way through Proverbs. We hear it one last time, and that is this message. Life is good when you live in Lady Wisdom's house. It is so good to spend time with Lady Wisdom. It is so good to be Lady Wisdom's companion, her friend. It is good to be the son or daughter of Lady Wisdom. You'll be blessed when she builds her house with you in it. This poem isn't telling us that in order to live a good, blessed, happy life, we have to find the perfect mate, the perfect spouse, the perfect wife, the perfect husband, if you flip it. It's a blessing to find a compatible spouse. Those of us who are married, we know it's a blessing, but there are other ways to be blessed. You don't have to be married to be blessed. You don't have to find just the right person to be happy. This poem points us beyond literal marriage, as Jesus and Paul do in the New Testament. They show us you don't have to be married to be good, to be blessed, to live a life that's pleasing to God. And what this poem is saying to all of us, young and old, single, married, rich, poor, it's saying when you make God's wisdom the number one priority in your life, when you make it the thing, the one thing, when you realize it's more valuable than all the rubies in the world, when you make it the number one priority in your life, you will not be sorry. Because Lady Wisdom will take care of you. And so here we are. At the end of this series out of Proverbs, at the very end of the book of Proverbs. And we're being given one last chance to listen. And if you've made it this far and you're still putting it off, you still haven't committed your life to being shaped, informed, and directed and guided by God's wisdom, there's one last undeniable, irresistible description of what life in Lady Wisdom's house is like. This is it. This is what it means to live in her house. This is how good it can be when you give your life to God's wisdom. And the poet's point couldn't be more clear. You'd have to be a fool. A fool. To not want to live in her house, because she will take care of you. Don't be a fool. As we leave this place today, may we all go home with Lady Wisdom, with her wisdom on our minds and in our hearts, with her wisdom being revealed through everything we do.